Back to the Hoops Temple podcast. Y'all know me, Nathan Schwartz. I'm here to say that we completely forgot to record an intro. We're also 2 days delayed putting this out. This was recorded Sunday before the Lakers game, but after the Clippers game. So your Cali boys here were in a pretty depressive state. I've since watched the Lakers game. I'm feeling a little bit better about my season. Feels weird that I'm putting a lot of hope in Matt Ryan to continue to hit threes, but we looked half decent. Moving Westbrook to the bench was a really solid move. It allowed him and LeBron to get going separately and then close together in the fourth in a pretty effective lineup. But I just wanted to say all of this because you're going to hear us be rather down on the Lakers, Kings, and Clippers, all of whom have gotten a win since we recorded this episode. Still hope you enjoy it. A lot of good content in this episode.
Six worst teams by net rating.
That's true, but which one's the worst, though? Very important.
It's actually really close between Lakers and Clippers.
Wow.
Let me find it.
Yeah, but you guys have out. You guys have your best player resting after a year and a half of resting.
All right. Worst teams. Detroit, -13.7, which is an expected 82 wins of 13.
Damn.
We've got Houston at -10, Lakers -9, Clippers -8.7. And the Kings at -5.
Not bad. Not bad at all. Where are our heads at? Where are the expectations at for our teams?
I don't even know what to say. Aaron, you texted me and asked me, like, hey, what's the who's your third favorite Laker from this season? And I was just like, I hate all of them. not even favorite, but like, who do I think is the third best? And then you're like, what about Damon Jones? And I was like, oh yeah, I like Jones. Okay, he's fine. But the rest of these guys all, like, get the fuck out of here.
He's athletic. I was at the Kings game against Miami. I went. I had great seats. It was good. I wish we had won some games before that, so that, like, the positive things I had to say kind of hold a little more weight. But I thought it looked really good. Our bench is still horrible. Malik Monk looks lost. Davion Mitchell doesn't look like an NBA player. Rashawn Holmes is hit or miss. But the Fox, Herder, Murray, Barnes, Sabonis, Fox thing is really fun. Like, they're pretty good. Herder is just an unbelievable shooter. He's like taller, wider, Buddy Hield, and better. It's exactly what we needed. And the leap that Fox has taken just in the pretty small sample size has been awesome. I think the most important thing to me, and Nate pointed this out, we were texting a little bit, was the defensive ability, because he picked up Hero, because Hero was just cooking Herder for a while, and Fox was able to get a bunch of crucial stops on him in the fourth. And he was, in previous seasons, Fox has been a good scorer, pretty good playmaker, and then a bad shooter and below average defender, and you really can't build around that, but you could overcome the shooting deficiencies if you could at least play some good defense.
Yeah, and we're also very excited to see Keegan Murray promoted to the starting lineup. I'll give you a stat. Fox, Herder, Barnes, Murray, DeMontis Sabonis in 73 positions, still, so a relatively small sample size, but plus 36.8 per 100 positions. Like, when those five guys are out there, they are destroying people.
It looks great, and then as soon as we sub the next guy in, it's really bad. But when they're out there, it's really good. Murray has this, like, Kawhi approach, like, the kind of just, he never seems tired, and he's just super robotic. He just loads up bucket.exe and just runs it, and then goes and scores. It's been fun. He's not like the superior defensive player I was, I guess, anticipating. But it's
obviously he's a rookie.
He's a rookie. Yeah. What is he? He's averaging like 18 points where is it? 68% true shooting. So it's pretty good. It's pretty good. The offensive flow has been there. He had some dumb mistakes in the game, but again, rookie stuff.
You know what we should do for next week?
Go ahead, Nate.
We should just only watch rookies. Just like dedicate this next week to watching the rookies and do like a full rookie breakdown.
Yeah. Nikola Jovic is so fucking tall. I did not recognize him. I thought he was just some random guy. And he ended up checking in because Bam got in foul trouble, and then Haslam ended up playing, which was insanity to watch Haslam play. He played quite a bit. Yeah. He was pretty, honestly, like, for a 42-year-old, he's pretty good. Like, he's not, like, it was, I thought it was just over. We actually, I mean, technically, he did have a plus-minus of, like, negative 30, but it didn't look that, it didn't look like it was his fault, necessarily. But they ended up subbing in Jovic, and I was like, whoa, like, that's Nikola Jovic. He's playing center, and he's, like, 7 feet tall. I thought he, I guess I hadn't studied his draft profile super intensely. I thought, I just, in my head, I was like, yeah, he's, like, 6'7", 6'8". He's not. He's, like, a generous 6'10", or a conservative 6'10".
I think when you get to the point where Haslam is playing a lot, it's not his fault that they're bad. Like things have to have gone that wrong that Haslam's in the game, so whatever you get from him is good.
You got to get through quite a few players before you sub the assistant coach in.
Well, to be fair, they're Deadman and, is it Yurtseven?
Yeah, Yurtseven.
Yeah.
They were both hurt or inactive, so I think they're already pretty thin, all things considered. Let me bring up the Haslam stats. Go ahead.
It's only 8 minutes. It's not that much.
It felt like forever.
What was his season high last year?
Oh God, you guys really gonna have me pull up Haslam stats?
It felt like forever. He really played for 8 minutes. Yeah. I guess he basically played the whole second quarter, essentially.
Jovic only played one single minute.
They put him in at the, I think it was like Haslam played basically the whole second. And then Jovic played at the end because Bam was in foul trouble pretty quickly.
All right. Do you guys want to guess how many minutes was Haslam's high last year?
Was it more than 8?
Man. I'm going to say he logged like a 10-minute game.
Let's see how many games did he play in. He played in 13 regular season games.
He scored 171 points since 2016. It's pretty impressive. How many points per year is that? What's the points per year stat?
In game number 13 for Haslam, which was played April 10th, he played 20 minutes, scored 2 points, had 4 fouls, and 6 rebounds. So there's your Haslam numbers. But just to recenter on what is the patheticness of the Pacific Division, the Kings now have one more win than the Lakers.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's give Nate the floor for 10 minutes. Go ahead. Just say whatever you need to say.
So I've been thinking a lot about Allen Iverson lately.
Okay.
And how Allen Iverson was this masterful offensive player that Philadelphia built the perfect defensive lineup around him, and he had to carry their offense 100%, but the rest of the team locked down everyone with their defense so much that it was functional. And you could build that team 1,000 different ways and not be as successful. If you got Iverson more help on the offense, it's less defensively good. Like, that team is a shot in the dark. I don't know how you construct a team about LeBron at this point. Because I was like thinking in my head, like, all right, Pat Bev can't do anything. He's like defense, but then he's trying to create on offense. Because you need someone else to create for LeBron at this point. LeBron's too tired to create. So I was like, what if we flipped Pat Bev for Patty Mills? Like, Patty Mills looks so out of place in Brooklyn. They could use a defensive guard next to Kyrie. You know, someone else out there other than Ben Simmons. And
bench Ben Simmons for Pat Beverly?
Yeah, like that seemed to make sense. But I'm like, all right, so then we have someone who can ball handle. And now LeBron has to do more on the defensive end. I don't want LeBron doing more on the defensive. I legitimately don't know where you even start with constructing this team, except for to undo every move they've made. I forget who just had Danny Green on their podcast, but Danny Green's like, yeah, you know, I got traded by the Lakers. And I was like, yeah, we traded him and the pick that would be Jaden McDaniels, who had a great game with Minnesota against the Lakers. You know, he was really locking up LeBron. Like, man, those two guys would be really nice to have back. If we could flip back and not have traded for Russell Westbrook and still have Kuzma, Harrell, and KCP, that'd be awesome. Also, if we could have kept Alex Caruso as opposed to saying we can find another white guy that can come off the scrap heap and be good, I'm out on Reeves. I'm so far out on Reeves because he tries to make passes flashy. Like, he had one play where he hustled. He got this rebound, and he does this fake no look and then, like, passes to the guy in the corner. But the defense was like, there's a wide-open guy in the corner, and he's obviously passing because he's got his back to the basket, and he's running out from under the basket. And they just ran straight to the corner guy. He done this fake and then threw him. Like, if you just passed, you would have beaten the defender there, and he would have had an open shot. But no, you're making the game more complicated because you want to look cool, because you want to be the bald eagle, and you're not the freaking bald eagle.
I think the most worrying thing for the Lakers is that LeBron and AD have been, like, pretty good. LeBron's look, the shooting numbers are down, the screen numbers are down. Davis has looked pretty good. He does walk like my grandma. Like, he has these hips that just, like, he walks like he's about to retire, but he's not even 30 yet. My poor grandma's going to hear that. I just realized that. Sorry, grandma.
That's an insult to grandma to say that she walks like Anthony Davis.
My grandma's aware of her age. She'll be okay. But Anthony Davis is a professional basketball player.
You said
player.
He's not even 30 yet. I'm 30. Yeah, I'm trying to worry about what you're going to say about me. You see me walk around.
But Davis looks horrible, just walking around like that. But the numbers are still pretty good. He's like, the steal and block numbers are kind of ridiculous if it's like 2.5 on both ends. But to have both the stars be like okay, at least like pretty decent, and still be 0-5 is worrying.
Yeah, the one good thing that I can think of for the Lakers is that we have been without Thomas Bryant, who is supposed to be our starting center, and we've been without Dennis Schroeder, who I think takes over the starting point guard role. And I don't know how much longer they're going to be.
Jeez, Dennis Schroeder. The Celtics were like begging to get rid of him by the deadline, weren't they? They got Houston to take him for nothing.
Yeah, they brought back Daniel Tice for him, but basically nothing. It's not a great thought, but like the Lakers just need competent players. Because I got to tell you, if I have to keep watching Troy Brown Jr. out there, it's not a good sign. Wenyen Gabriel, there was times where I think Wenyen Gabriel doesn't know how to dribble the basketball. And then there are moments where I think he's the best Laker. And the fact that those moments are like back to back and in sequence with each other just makes me so worried. Like, and we know they start off with a tough schedule, like Warriors, Clippers, Blazers, Nuggets, Timberwolves. Probably should have beat the Blazers, but I mean, that was a buzzer beater that everyone got to listen to me watch. It's a forgivable 0-5. They're going to have easier games. They're going to have easier stretches. But man, it's not looking good to start.
Yeah, if I'm to offer up one more piece of hope for the Lakers, if they can figure out just how to score any points, like their offensive rating is worse in the league, 96.4. And like we said last week, they don't have any lasers, but they still should still shoot out of the 20s. Like they should be in the 30s, which will help a little bit. Their cleaning the glass defensive rating is third in the league, so they are actually performing really well on defense. And you look at all four factors and they're pretty much good across the board, which, you know, sometimes that's one way that you can look at it and try to find something that's outlier, as if they're being bolstered by just one of the four factors. But they do everything well and they're a top three defense. And so if you can just get to mediocre offense, not worse than the league, then you're like kind of decent. Like let's say 20th. 20th is 112 points per 100 possessions, which would make them +7, which is the net rating of New Orleans, who are 4-2. It's like, if you get to 20th on offense, then you're pretty good.
I totally agree with the fact that the Lakers are shooting, like, it's just historically bad. Like, this isn't going to continue. They're not going to, at this pace, this team wins, like, 5 games. Shooting like they're shooting. And that's not going to happen. They'll be able to turn it around offensively a little bit just by the grace of some 3-point shots falling. They're not going to be the worst team in the league.
Do you know what the Lakers are shooting for three? If you don't look it up.
I think it's 26%.
Okay. If you had to guess, if the Lakers' three-point percentage was a human, could they buy a beer? Could they rent a car?
I think they could buy a beer, but they can't rent a car yet.
The age at which you can rent a car is 25. They are at 23%.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right. Dylan, talk to me about the misery in Clipperland. Where are you guys at? Your star has not been back after being gone for a really long time.
Yeah, I think he's played what, like Kawhi we're talking about. He's played like 2 games, and Paul George has also been really bad. He was bad again today, as we lost another early game to New Orleans. The big thing for, I mean, it's not just Paul George. Like, yeah, Kawhi's not playing. Paul George has been bad. Reggie Jackson has been really bad as well, which is concerning. You know, a lot was, we've had a lot on Reggie Jackson, and he's been bad this year. He was bad last year, and quietly, like, he was bad the year before. He just became really good in the playoffs. And so Our starting point guard is awful. John Wall has been good. We're 10 points better per 100 positions when John Wall's in the game over Reggie. So maybe that's kind of a fix, but then you get into some spacing issues. And again, it's the offense that's the issue. And the team just looks disjointed. Like, we do have some guys that can make threes, even though they're not making them at the moment. But field goal percentage from, like, every zone is bad. And we turn the ball over constantly. And also don't get to the line. And so it's just a bad all round. But like there being some hope for the Lakers, the defense has been pretty good. And so once we figure out the offense, I think maybe you can get to being a decent team by the fact that the defense has not been awful.
What's your guys' team on a panic rating right now, 1 to 10?
It's so early and like shots aren't falling. I mean, if you just look at the field goal percentage of each player on the team, it's like all of those are going to come up, besides maybe Reggie Jackson, who's below 40% from the field again. Again, once the offense gets better, it can't be that bad. Like, we shouldn't be the second worst offense in the NBA based on the players that are on this team. And if we can get some more consistency and just figure out like a cohesiveness on offense, stop giving the other team the ball, that'll make a huge difference. So low to moderate. Given that I predicted them to be the number one seed, a little bit of a panic on that. But in terms of just like getting good enough to be a relatively high seed and look ready by the playoffs, relatively low on the panic.
I'm panicking a little bit just because I have predicted the Kings to be just good enough for like a 10-9 eighth seed, like 40 wins essentially, and you can't start slow if you're hoping to sneak into the ninth seed essentially. Although the hope is still there because we did win a game. That lineup, like you said, is so dominant. If we can trade for a bench piece, we have all our picks because no one fucking makes deals with us. We have nothing to offer except for the Pacers.
Those picks are pretty valuable.
You tell me you don't want a Sacramento Kings 2028 first round pick, unprotected. Give us anybody. That's worth LeBron right there.
I'll make that call.
Yeah, we have all of our picks and a few extra seconds. Like although Portland, no. Atlanta has ours next year because of the Herder deal, but I think it's pretty heavily protected, if I remember correctly. I've gotten way off topic. I'd give my panic skill like a seven, just because we've looked really bad in moments, and also every win is super crucial in the West.
Yeah, and also some of the other teams that you're going to be competing with for those lower play-in spots have looked really good, like Portland. Like
the Jazz.
Yeah, the Jazz, New Orleans have all looked awesome, and theoretically those are the teams that you've got to beat to get to that 8-9-10.
We'll talk about the Jazz in a second. What are you going to say, Nate?
I was going to ask, how many picks would you give me for LeBron?
The king to the Kings.
Yeah.
Like all of them, basically everything. I don't know, five of them? Like, I want to make the playoffs.
Did we also get Keegan? What's it going to take to get Keegan?
No. You can.
Two picks and Keegan for LeBron?
That's interesting. Would you give up like two firsts? And yeah, I would do that for LeBron James. He's 38.
Could you do like Sabonis, Barnes, Murray, and two firsts for LeBron and AD? Because you said before that like the Kings are like the perfect supporting cast, like of depth of good players, and then the Lakers are two good players and no other good players. So if you just like combine the two, then you're a really good team.
My panic meter for the Lakers is incredibly high right now because. Like, we kind of knew that we would lose games early on. We knew the roster was hard. And we know shooting's not going to bounce back. But we also know there's going to be a LeBron and a Davis injury at some point. So, like, I think when healthy and rolling, the Lakers can win above 50% of their games. I think maybe 55% with all things going right. But we know there's going to be a two-week absence of LeBron where they'll go 2-5. And we know there's going to be a 20 games of AD missing. He already missed his first, maybe not 20.
No, it's 20. He's already doing it. He was limping around by game two. As an Anthony Davis fantasy owner, he said he wanted to start all 82 games, and he was day-to-day every single game he played. And he finally missed the fourth game. He was so close to all 82.
That's why he's day-to-Davis.
Yeah, so good. He's at my top 75, and I feel strongly about that. Like, he's just one of the most talented players, one of the most dominant players you've ever seen. But man, he's holding, he like holds us back after everything. He's just like.
But what I was gonna
go ahead, Nate.
What I was gonna say about Utah is I watched them, And Dylan, you had mentioned something about Chris Vernon's don't play players who suck. They just, like, their eighth man would be most teams' fifth starter or sixth man, which is just incredible depth. Like, their best player, it's still probably team's fourth player, like, fourth or fifth. Like, Lowry's becoming a guy, and Lowry's looking real nice, but
who?
They're one through eight.
Oh, Lowry. I thought, what's it, Kyle Lowry? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Lowry Markkanen. But they're one through eight would all be heavy rotation minutes on pretty much any team. And they either need to blow it up fast or here's my flip caveat. What if they're just like the Nets, the Brooklyn Nets with D'Angelo Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert, who are all kind of the same thing, where they were like, yeah, they could be a team's third, fourth, fifth option type guy. And now we're going to go get superstars. And, like, what if they just flip these picks? What if they pull off the Davis and LeBron just pick massive package and just plop those two guys in there?
The Kings went to 0-4 and the Jazz were, like, 4-1. And I was just so fucking depressed looking at stats being like, is Jordan Clarkson better than De'Aaron Fox? Like, is Lauri Markkanen actually better than Sabonis? Like, what's, like, did we just build our team around two guys that aren't as good as, like, these Jazz players? They look good. I think they're a great spot, and kudos to Danny Ainge for doing that. But I figured they would be bad. But
Danny Ainge gets no credit. He was not trying to do this.
No.
Danny Ainge was trying to get it fucked up.
So who is it? It looks like it's going to be Orlando and Houston again.
Yeah, Detroit wants in.
Detroit's. I'm sorry, you got no good basketball to watch.
It's okay. I can't watch Detroit basketball games because I live in the market. So they have a 3-day blackout.
That's preposterous. I don't know how that's. That makes no fucking sense to me. Who's supposed to watch these games?
It's. I don't know.
Just go on crack streams or meth streams or whatever illegal streaming site's popular right now. I think crack streams got banned, so they rebranded as meth streams, but it all works. They have Red Zone. Red Zone's really expensive. They have that shit for free.
Well, we don't condone meth, but we do condone meth streams here on this podcast. But I was watching a Utah game a little bit before we came on here, Utah versus Memphis, and it's amazing how they can play the hot hand because they have a lot of guys that, you know, can get hot. Nikhil Alexander-Walker is averaging like 8 minutes a night and has only played in four of their seven games, but he got like two steals. I don't know what they're officially recorded as, but he like deflected off a guy's hand and forced a turnover, and he got another steal, and he was just a pesky defender, and they were just leaving him out there. They like have this whole team of like heat check guys, and then Jared Vanderbilt for defense. And so like, hey, Malik Beasley hit a couple of big shots. They fed him again. Jordan Clarkson hit a few shots, then went cold, and they're like, all right, we're gonna pull Clarkson. Like, there's no loyalty. That's just mercenaries out there gunning, and they're all okay with it. And like, Kelly Olynyk had a drive and he hit the shot and made an and one, and it was like a high school volleyball team, like all stepping forward and like slapping their hands and yelling ace together, but like the entire roster just fist pumps at the same time. And I was like, man, you guys don't know each other. You're basically everyone's discarded high lottery picks that like, man, I hope that guy could be something. But there's a camaraderie between them.
They could just they could gather a OKC-esque treasure trove of picks by just selling all these guys. They could just be a AAA team in baseball terms to all the contenders. Like, here's Jordan Clarkson, and here's Markkanen, and give us a first, and give us these first. And they could go either way. Like, they're in a fun spot.
Yeah. And Nate, you made the comparison between the Jazz and that old Brooklyn team. But maybe the Thunder team that made the playoffs that year, a couple of years ago with CP3, is a better analogy, where you've got, you know, this team that's not supposed to be good, got all the discarded veterans, but just by having a bunch of guys that can play and having a veteran point guard and some, you know, talented young players that you can, like, throw together a nice 8-seed run out of nowhere and then sell those guys off when their value's at its highest.
Yeah, it completely crushes their chances for Victor Wembanyama if they're actually good.
Yeah.
But I feel like here's what you do. You work back channel discussions where you offer to trade all these picks you've acquired for a couple of really good pieces. And at the same time, you work a trade to trade your own first round pick because everyone's expecting you to tank. And then like You just trade them all off and you bring in a couple of superstars and you see what this team could be, because these pieces have been really nice. And it's really confusing for the defense. Like, hey, should you go double Markkanen? Well, doubling Markkanen means you're leaving Clarkson, who's actually a better player. Like, who knows? They're all an equal level of player. There's not like a clear pecking order where, you know, Golden State, hey, we're going to go double Curry and we're going to let Draymond shoot because that's his role, to be the open guy. It's really fun to watch.
What a strange start. I think we had so many just preconceived notions to what all the tanking teams would be and what all the media or all the good is, like tanking and good. There's no in between except for literally just Sacramento. They're the only team that wasn't tanking but also wasn't good. But
Whoa. There's the Wizards. Sacramento East.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Sacramento East. Wizards have started fairly good. Yeah, I mean, the Knicks, I think the Knicks are a real team. That's a real thing. I think everything I said or everything that we said and everyone said about Brunson kind of opening up their offenses has looked good. It turns out having a point guard is really cool. He passes the ball to people and they don't have to do it themselves. It's a new kick in the NBA. Point guards. Come get one.
As a Lakers fan, what's that like? What are these point guards that you speak of?
You know, the Kings haven't had horrible point guards. McFox is pretty good. We had Rondo 1 year. He led the league in assists, so I'm not really sure if he actually was playing good basketball. Isaiah Thomas was pretty good. Darren Collison. Yeah, but our wings are just always just atrocious. You need those.
I'm not fully sold on the Knicks' resurgence, and they are 3-2, so you're either one game above or one game below 500 with five games in. And the teams that they beat are the Pistons, the Magic, and the Hornets.
Oh, jeez.
With losses to the Bucks and the Grizzlies.
Okay, well, that's fair. I think it was ridiculous that you guys had Fox so low on the top 100. And it's just, I think maybe the Sabonis thing is still, like, up in the air. That was preposterous. He was way better than Draymond Green. Are you fucking kidding me? That was ridiculous at the time. That is even worse now.
16 versus 82. It's my one defense.
Draymond's, like, as much as that, like, 16 versus 82 is a thing, Draymond's also, like, defensive player of the year caliber regular season player. Like, it's not like he's out there doing nothing.
Yeah.
Also, like, he makes shit happen on the offense and is possibly the best defender in the league. It's not like he's doing nothing.
Also, Fox was still top 50.
I apologize, both of you, formally, with tears. I want a letter with, like, tear stains on it.
Could you move him from where we had him at 48? To like 35, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. But the league is really good.
Yeah, he's 28 points, 7 boards, 5.5 assists. I kind of wish his assist numbers were higher, because right now he's 5.5 assists and 4 turnovers. This is 5 games. It's stupid that I'm even having this conversation, but I'd like to see that. Especially because our backup were
higher.
Yeah, you know, wins. wins are cool. He's shooting 40% or 39% from deep. Got that going for him. There you go. He plays defense and he can shoot. He's the best point guard in the league. Steph Curry meets Tony Allen.
Maybe you're right that he is a little bit better than Jordan Poole.
Got that.
We had him 20 spots above Poole.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he did.
We got there. I will say, just the overall talent of young guards, I've just freaking loved it. Like, I was sitting watching the second 76ers-Raptors game with my wife, and I'm, like, watching this, and I'm like, sweetie, you have to watch this defensive possession. Like, look at how the Raptors move. And then Maxi just drilled a three in their face. I'm like, all right, bad example. Next time. Look at how the Raptors move. They can switch everything. And then Maxi just hits another three. And, like, I keep saying this, and my wife is like, man, that number zero is really good. And I'm like, fuck. Like, what is going on? And Maxi just started cooking them, and then they started crowding his shot because he hit his first 5 threes, and then he just blows past him to the layup. Like, the level of good guards makes me feel like the Jalen Brunson signing was even worse, because it seems like everyone has a guard that's able to just pop off and have an awesome night.
I'm ready to get my feelings hurt about the De'Aaron Fox All-Star snub. Like, I've already thought about it. I know it's coming. He's going to be like 27-7-7, and we're going to win. And we're going to have, like, you know, 25 wins at the deadline, and he's not going to make it. That's okay. Next year.
Well, he's going to lose a spot to Damian Lillard, who's been fantastic.
Steph.
Steph.
I mean, Dame has an injury issue, you know, Cav is it? It's a has a hamstring or calf?
Yeah,
either one's finicky. Yeah, but either one's really finicky. Like he might play. He might not play much.
All right. So Dame, Steph,
SGA right now.
SGA,
Luka,
Ja.
You count him as a guard.
Yeah,
Luka will be counted as a guard.
And it's over. All right. Conversation's done. None of those guys, all those guys are playing better than Foxer. Feelings are still hurt.
Devin Booker.
Booker.
LeBron James.
I mean, like, just knowing the fan voting, fucking Poole's going to make it over him.
Is this going to be the year? Like, you've got to have one undeserving Warrior each year.
Every year.
Is it the Jordan Poole year?
You guys are talking about good teams? You're talking about bad teams. What are the good teams?
Hey, we're talking
right
about
now,
Jazz.
The Suns, the current Suns have the highest SRS of all time, so watch out for them. 14.7.
I gotta say, I think
they're literally the best team of all time.
I was trying to check out the Suns, and I just picked the wrong game, because I ended up watching them play the Pelicans without Zion, without Herb, without Ingram, and I was like, man, they're really good at stopping Jonas Valanciunas and Najee Marshall. Like, good job, Suns. Really figure that one out. Oh, Ayton's hurt in the first and only plays like 7 minutes. All right, well, not the most impressive.
Yeah, I haven't managed to catch very much Phoenix this year, so maybe one of you guys can tell me. How does a team with Chris Paul averaging 9 points on 45 true shooting and playing Jock Landale big minutes, like, how are they a good team? No Jay Crowder all year.
Jock Landale is coming for Rashawn Holmes's like NBA hipsterdom love. He has this. He has the nice little push shot. He gets in there. He can, you know, set some good screens. There's also just Bridges is trying to do a little bit more. He's looking a little bit more confident, creating his own shot. But it's a lot of consistency. It's a lot of just not making the dumb mistake, making that extra pass that is a turnover, or, you know, missing the rotations. Like, they've had the same crew. Campaign has looked good in the moments I've caught him.
Campaign's back.
Yeah, he'll have a few good regular season games and then collapse again in the playoffs. But that's kind of what we knew coming into this.
If we were before the season and I told you that Jock Landale is going to average more points than Chris Paul, would you have the Suns as one of the best teams in the league?
No. Chris Paul's still averaging 10 assists per game. They have Aiden and Cam Johnson and Booker and Bridges, and fuck else do you need?
Apparently nothing.
Nothing. Literally nothing.
If you phrased it like Jock Landale is going to average more points than Chris Paul, I'd be like, oh my God, they found another just guy off the heap that's going to be awesome.
Chris Paul's going to average fewer points than Jock Landale.
Yeah, phrasing it like that makes me worried. It's all about context here.
I feel like Dylan watched all of the Jock Landale game versus the Clippers. He really internalized this.
That's what I notice every time like I catch a bit of Phoenix. I'm like, what the fuck is Jock Landale? What? He's an integral part of their team. It's like massive white Australian guy with a mullet.
I love Landry Shamet. I think he's always going to play for a contender every single year he plays. And he's going to be that three-point shooter. He's going to be in every single trade rumor, every trade package with, hey, Landry Shamet, three-point sniper. I think he's going to play for 15 teams in his career.
Would Landry Shamet start for the Lakers?
Yes.
Oh, 100%. 100%. You play 40 minutes a game.
Yeah, that's not even close. That's just an absolute yes. Hell, Jock Landale could start for the Lakers potentially.
Mm. Do we think that all 10 players of the Phoenix Suns rotation would start for the Lakers?
This is a really sad game. Why are we playing this?
Can I cry about Davion Mitchell for a second? Just 15 seconds. He looks horrible. I thought he was pretty, like, he was like a fairly good rookie last year. You're like, hey, this guy's really good on defense, and if he can just be average offensively, like, he'll be in the league for a long time. He's not average offensively. Excuse me. He's not average offensively. I mean, it's a super small sample size, and the bench has been really wonky. We've used a ton of different lineups, but he played a little bit of backup point guard yesterday, and he looked horrible. And I was really sad. It was Herter. Kevin Herter ended up, like, handling the ball for us. He has a really tight handle.
Herter's look nice.
Oh, yeah. What's Herter's stats?
I mean, definitely improved, because that last game has got to be above the mean with just shooting. What, he start off 5 for 5?
It's just a massive sample size at this point, though. 5 whole games.
Yeah.
He's 17, 4 assists, 3 boards on 50-54, 71 splits. Speaking of 71, we can't hit our free throws. I think we're the second worst free throw percentage in the league. Lost us a few of those games.
Yeah.
Hey, at least you can get to the line unlike the Clippers, who attempt the fewest, who have the lowest foul rate in the league.
Yeah, I saw a thing about how low Golden State's foul rate has been, especially in comparison. If they've had like a negative 10 free throw deficit to their opponent. And I just, some of that stylistically, like when you do a bunch of jump shots, you're not getting to the lane. You're not drawing fouls nearly as much. I've also really enjoyed how the game has been officiated this year. Like the elimination of the take foul has been absolutely fantastic. I do think it is hurting the Lakers because then they get in these running matches and Darvin Ham wants them to be a running team. And 38-year-old LeBron is not a running person. There's been a lot more fluidity, a lot more back and forth. I'm seeing, you know, a 3-on-2 gets turned into a 2-on-3 the other way. Or like, you know, guys get caught in transition. You have these like moments of back and forth basketball that's had a lot of really fun dunks and a lot of really exciting possessions.
It's just a smart thing to have done. If you had brought someone in who had never watched basketball before and you just be like, yeah, that's the thing they do and that just stops the entire game, they'd probably be like, that's stupid. I don't want to watch this anymore. Let's watch something else.
Yeah. You're like, the best part of the game is transition, and there's this thing that teams can easily do to just stop it.
Get rid of it.
It makes sense.
Can I talk to you guys for a minute about the Cavs and the Celtics?
Please.
I don't like Tatum and Brown, and I can't quite put my finger on it. I was watching them, and they're both really good. They're both efficient. They both drive well. And like possessions where they would ISO and drive, they'd get to the basket. And possessions where they didn't ISO, they'd move the ball well. But I could just like, there's something in their body language where I could like see as soon as they catch the ball, if they're going to pass or if they're going to drive. And as soon as they drive, I know they're not passing it because it's just like you see in their movements, this is what they're going for. And they're selling all out. And I don't know, but I don't like it. It feels off. Have you guys gotten to watch much Celtics? Like, is it just they need Robert Williams back?
I watched one Celtics game, and I was trying to watch the like a Kings game or anything in the area, but for some reason I have the Celtics broadcast, so I watched them play the Magic. I was getting like Patriot ads and shit. I was living the Bostonian life.
How do those rings feel?
And I was fantastic. I was a winner, man. And the Celtics are awesome because they were playing Orlando, so I can't contribute to this conversation. I thought they were kicking their ass. So I was like, this Celtics seems really good.
All right, I'll give you a number on Tatum and Brown, maybe not meshing great. Lineups when Tatum and Brown are both on the court for the Celtics on the year in total, negative 5.9, basically negative 6. That fucking sucks. Tatum on, Brown off, or Brown on, Tatum off, both plus 10.
Wow.
So when you've got one of those guys in the game, they stomp teams. When they're both in the game, they are getting outscored.
I'm going to rev up my trade. One of the two videos I was posting around January last year, and they made a run to the finals.
Hey, last year I tore apart their deadline moves, and it completely worked. So what do I know? If the vibes felt off, and then they were getting just dominated on the boards, and had to go to a two big lineup with Noah Vonleh. And like, sure, not everyone's gonna have the size of the Cavaliers, but they really need Williams back. Like, replacing Luke Kornet in the lineup with just Robert Williams will be absolutely huge.
I'd consider myself someone who pays pretty good attention to basketball, but every once in a while when the season starts, you're like, whoa, like Noah Vonleh's fucking playing. Like who let that happen? I didn't think he was on a team. But he's crucial. The Celtics need Noah Vonleh.
Yeah.
He randomly became the Embiid stopper. I think that was probably one of the few Celtics games I saw was when they played the Sixers and they had Noah Vonleh out guarding Embiid. And like, I think it's just one of those things where like sometimes it can get in your mind where you're like, oh, I can easily beat this guy. It's like every play you're trying to beat him and then he gets a stop and you're like, wait, what the fuck? And like you just want to go against him every single play, but he was like getting stops and Embiid was like confused. He's like, how am I not scoring over this guy? What's going on? Random Embiid stop and Noah Vonleh.
Yeah.
Man.
Embiid stops himself. And we could talk about the Sixers a little bit. Kind of a slow start, Harden's basically what he was last year, at least to start. Embiid settles. It's tough to watch him. He really does. He likes shooting over people. That's kind of what I gathered.
Yeah, watching them without Embiid, I've got a couple of Sixers games this year, but seeing them without Embiid was a lot more fun than seeing them with Embiid. And like, I had moments of watching that where I was like, man, Tobias Harris, not that bad. Also, I took down this as a note, and this is a verbatim note. Jay Crowder wishes he was PJ Tucker.
Interesting. You hate Jay Crowder. I brought him up for a top 100 in like the 95 spot. You're like, no way. What did he do to you?
He wishes he was PJ Tucker.
Really? Does he? I think he's fine.
Yeah. No. Here's the thing. What do they both do?
They play defense and hit three.
Yeah. And here's the thing. PJ Tucker actually plays defense. Like, he gets up into guys and forces stuff. He, as an off-ball player, will try to get these offensive rebounds. Like, the amount of effort he puts into it, like, there are hustle guys and there are fake hustle guys. And I think Jay Crowder is a fake hustle guy. And we saw it when he got replaced by PJ Tucker. Like, teams are better with PJ Tucker than they are with Jay Crowder. And I'm just out. I'm out on Jay Crowder. He wishes he was PJ Tucker. That's, I'm leaving it at that.
Why Jay Crowder? What's Jay Crowder's always on good teams, and I'm not gonna waste my energy debating PJ Tucker and Jay Crowder. These identical people.
Jay Crowder's always there, but they never do anything with him there. It's like you have this idealized version of him as a 3-and-D wing, and he gets places, and they're just like, oh yeah, he's not doing anything. But PJ Tucker's winning you championships at least once.
On like the 2-4 Sixers.
I'm Milwaukee. Shows up there, makes it happen.
I honestly do not know if PJ Tucker's any good. I've watched a lot of PJ Tucker playoff minutes, and he is the opposite of he contradicts everything I know about basketball. I've watched basketball games before. Like, I know how basketball works. And you're like, hey, there's this guy who scores 0 points and also just gets cooked by Kevin Durant all game. And here's a 3-year, $30 million contract. And I was like, I don't know if like that guy's really worth that. And I liked the move in the offseason, but it comes back to it. You're like, he's going to guard the other team's best player because he can do it. I don't know if he's really good at it. And I don't know if he's doing anything offensively. But I think what I liked about him for Philly the most is still like he gives a shit. Philly needed like give a shit guys. And that's who he is.
There's a PJ Tucker TikTok meme about like he holds the opposing team's best player to an efficient 40 points.
He does. And then, you know, and then he's like, I don't understand. Someone explain this to me. Is it just hard? It's hard to play defense. Like, that's the answer. And
it is hard to play defense, but it's also like PJ Tucker does the little things. PJ Tucker gets his hand on a lot of loose balls. He's getting in there, getting tips and deflections. And like, there's just a higher hustle level. Tucker and Crowder were both on the Miami Heat. Crowder was there in 2020. Tucker was there 2021 playoff runs. Do you want to guess what the on-off differential was? Or sorry, the net rating differential for Crowder versus Tucker?
I have no idea. Go ahead.
With Crowder on, they were 1 point better. With Tucker on, they were 9 points better.
Dang.
In the playoffs. With Crowder, that Crowder year, Crowder averages more points. Sure. He's 12 points, 5.5 rebounds with 34% from three, and he's jacking 7 threes a night. PJ in the playoffs, only 8 points, still 5.5 rebounds, but actually providing some spacing, 45% from three, much lower volume attempts, but you know, he's out there. He's making an impact. He's not taking shots when he doesn't need to. Jay Crowder wishes he was PJ Tucker.
All right, I think we can move on from the PJ Tucker, Jay Crowder argument. Can I bring up something? I won't talk about the Kings game all too much, but how worried are you guys about Miami? Because I was watching them, and I don't think I predicted them to just be kind of good, and I think that's what they're gonna be. Like, they have Butler, they have Bam. Bam is just an insane athlete. That dude is huge. And that's kind of it. Hero is just a bucket, but it's hard. You know, you can go at him defensively. You really can, and that's kind of it. Kyle Lowry is getting up there, mm-hmm. and he's had a pretty slow start. His ass is huge, though. I saw it in person. I was four rows back. That shit is fucking insane. It was unbelievable. I was in the baseline to watch him inbound the ball. It was like watching like a meteor strike Earth.
But he I love that there's this like specific to NBA fan thing where like other straight men would like totally not understand, but given that we're just in this NBA world, we're like, fuck yeah, man.
It's preposterous. It's like ridiculous. He had a play where Fox grabbed a rebound and he was swiping like after the rebound was secured all game long, and he finally got it. He like cherry picked a shot. I think he did the same. I think he's still like two or three of our inbound plays. Like he's just a little sneaky bastard. It's just tough. But he's not, I guess, as your fourth, third guy. I guess as your fourth guy, you're still in pretty good shape. I don't know. I just didn't love their... I didn't love it.
No. I haven't loved what I've seen from Miami. And part of that's Butler waxes and wanes. Like, Butler's...
He had a tough game. He did not play well against Sacramento.
No, he was almost non-existent in the first half. And he was being guarded a lot by De'Aaron Fox. Like, that's not good.
Fox... All first team all defense.
Bam also made me nervous because like, when is Bam going to take that leap and actually be good offensively?
He said he was going to take 18 shots a game. I was all in. Lied.
Cool. He's at 12 this year.
That's not 18. That's not close to 18.
It's not like and the shots that he's taking, like he took Sabonis off the dribble and brought him in. There's a phantom call on Sabonis, but otherwise we'd be talking about how Bam airballed a layup. Same as Benson. Like, Bam has a nice ton of potential. I'm totally at fault for overrating Bam the last several times we've done the top 100. Like, he ended up at 17th in our rankings.
He was ahead of Dame. That was dumb.
Yeah.
If Dylan was here, he would have saved us from that.
Would you have?
I'm just giving him credit. Just take it.
I'm taking the credit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I saw this coming.
He would have saved us.
But I do think you're right with Bam. It's he like is one of those guys like who's another example? I guess like OG Anunoby, where they're like these guys, and it's like this is gonna be the year he's gonna take that step offensively.
Mm-hmm.
But like some of these guys, they just never take it, and all it's gonna be is he's gonna be like a really good defender who scores 17 points a game on decent efficiency, and your offense is gonna suck if he's your main guy. I'm giving up on superstar Bam. I mean, like, the defense is still so good that he's, like, factoring in, like, playoff versatility. So, like, demoting Gobert, he's, like, possibly the best defender in the league. And, it's not like 17 points on 50% field goal is bad, but I'm giving up on superstar Bam.
I love Bam and everything he can do, but I'm starting to kind of have my same, like, thoughts about Hakeem that I have about Bam. And, like, the Hakeem is usually in reference to Shaq of, like, Hakeem is more skilled. Hakeem, in theory, is a better player than Shaq because Hakeem can do more things. Hakeem is a better passer. Hakeem is a better defender. Hakeem has 1,000 post moves. I'd love it if Bam had 1,000 post moves. Bam has, like, a spin and a missed layup right now. But Bam can supposedly pass. Bam can ball handle. Bam should be able to do a lot. And I watched him go toe-to-toe with Sabonis, and I left feeling pretty meh. Like,
yeah,
I don't feel like there's that gap that should be there. You know, he did a great job limiting Sabonis, but he wasn't able to get his on the other end, and so you kind of just walk away with kind of a meh.
Did he, though? Sabonis was 8 of 9 from the... He would have had 40 if he wasn't in foul trouble.
He got him in foul trouble. That's limiting.
God, I'm in foul trouble. That's bullshit.
It's limiting.
I don't think his fouls are on Bam necessarily, but Bam, what was happening for a lot of the game is Sabonis would just kind of stand like at the free throw line, and Bam would just basically dribble with the full head of steam. And it looked like, and it felt like that Bam could just take off from where Sabonis was standing and jump over him and dunk the ball. Like, he just looks like that kind of athlete, and it just, obviously that's not going to happen, but he didn't, it felt like there should have been 1,000 points generated, and Bam did score quite a bit, but he should have dominated Sabonis, who's pretty slow-footed, and he really didn't.
Speaking of foot speed, to get back to Lowry, Lowry is a wonderful pest, and Lowry, I've always been a big fan of him. I got the Raptors jersey hanging behind me, but there's so many good young guards, just like what I was talking about with Maxey. Last podcast I was talking about Bones Highland, and I was like, there are so many good young guards that when you have an aging guard, he'll still have his moments. He'll still have that swipe, that pick. But can he night in, night out, consistently guard someone and chase them around? That ass is fat. It's slow.
It's slow. The Heat's contracts are pretty absurd. They have, in the 2023-2024 season, they have Butler making $45 million. That's an $8 million jump. Bam at 32, Lowry at 29, Duncan Robinson 18. Oladipo has a $9 million player option. I guarantee he picks that up. Tyler Hero's extension kicks in at 27. That's a lot of money. I mean, the cap is going to go up, but the cap going up can't save you from having Duncan Robinson and Kyle Lowry under contract for that long, unless you're willing to essentially say we're not going to be contenders, or we're going to get worse. Those guys are good players. I don't think they'd be able to flip them for more unless a lot of picks were attached, essentially.
Yeah. All right. So sounds like we are out on Miami being a superstar team. Are we also, I should say, I was listening to the Athletic Saturday Slam a Jam. And they were saying through five games, every title contender going back 50-something years has been at least, like, I forget if it was 3-5, or if it was, I think maybe it was through six games, they're all 4-2.
Hmm. Lies. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, not all title contenders, but all teams that actually won said title, which would eliminate a lot of teams here. Are there any teams that you guys feel like completely giving up on based off of their early season performance, or any teams that you want to elevate into the title contention based on early season performance?
I thought Philly was going to be the best team in the East.
Yeah, Philly would probably be the one.
I can't see them winning four straight playoff games. I can see them winning two. They're just way more talented in their first round matchup, and then they win straight up. But when the going gets tough, I cannot imagine like the elevated Embiid Harden game really clicking against the Celtics or against Milwaukee. Let me look for teams to elevate. Go ahead.
Yeah, Embiid looks kind of cooked. Like, he doesn't look good.
He's shooting 50% from the field. That's interesting. Like, his number, yeah. Look at the numbers. Like, yeah, it's fine, but there's something about it.
He had that one really good 40-point outing that probably boosted up a lot of his numbers.
True. By next week, none of this, anything we're saying is going to matter, because we're looking at six games and we're like, whoa, it's happening. How about the Nets? Why not the Nets? Nate tricked me into predicting that they would be good and during our predictions. That team has the same issue as they are the Lakers East, where they have the two stars. Durant and Kyrie are playing better than LeBron and AD, at least by an offensive standpoint. And they're still losing. They're getting 80 points combined from the two, or 75 combined from the two. And it's just, now it seems not good enough. And they're adding players, but like Curry, and who else is coming back? Seth Curry. Give me Nets that are returning.
Joe Harris just is returning. Harris, I mean, he's missed a couple of games. Markieff Morris. This was big in clutch time moments for them in one game, and then out of the rotation the next. They also have had a semi-tough start with New Orleans, Toronto, Memphis, Milwaukee, Dallas, and then Indiana. It's like, not the toughest. You should be Indiana.
But if you're hoping for title contention, you really hope you don't go 1-5 and then your second best player just starts ranting about anti-Semitism just immediately.
Oh, gosh.
That's just you're really not looking for that if you're trying to win the championship. Because you're hoping for like a solid Kyrie season. You're like, nah, he's insane. Like, this is an insane person. It's not affecting his game right now, but eventually it will. Eventually he's going to take off like 2 weeks to go like protest against Jews or something.
Oh, God.
I guarantee it. I'll put money on. What's the money line on Kyrie going to protest Jewish people?
Or at least attend like an anti-Semitic film festival.
Yeah, he's going to miss games to do that.
This is the point of the podcast.
And he just proves more and more that he's the Kanye of the NBA.
Yeah.
This is the point of the podcast where I'd like to remind listeners that Aaron is Aaron Levi Schroeder, and I am Nathan Isaac Schwartz, and Dylan is Dylan Abraham Josiah Williamson. I actually don't know what either of you guys' middle names are.
You were kind of close, though. You kind of messed with me there. My middle name is The middle name is not Jewish, but I am a Jewish person, as is Nate. And Dylan is an honorary Jew, given his placement in between us on the Zoom call.
I thought you were gonna say I was Jewish passing because I've got the nose,
the curly hair. You're basically a Jew. Welcome to the club.
Mazel tov.
That's the second pod in a row me and Nate have, or I guess I've made just some Jewish joke.
I mean, it's not our fault that this is the world that we live in right now.
That's not crazy. He would totally do that. He would absolutely do that. That's not me just like riffing. I'm like, Kyrie would do that, and he would miss games if the schedules didn't line up. They'd call him like, "Hey, Kyrie, like we're gonna be like down this street protesting. Like, do you want to come?" And he's like, eh, "I could make it work. I'll make some phone calls.
Like, I'll move some stuff around. I'll call Adam, see if I can get him to reschedule."
Can I say something that's absolutely terrible after we've just had this conversation?
Sure. We can tell you if you have to edit it out after.
I've actually really liked the way Kyrie's looked out there.
Oh, yeah.
He's been good. Offensively, he's impossible to guard. I don't know where they're going.
That's always been the thing with Kyrie, though, is like when he's on the court and just playing basketball, you're like, this guy's so good. And then like he steps off the court and then you're like, oh, man.
Yeah. They should just
keep and also, him he's played court. All the games too, which is a big thing.
Yeah, they should keep him on the court. Just he's never allowed to leave.
Yeah, I wish cancel culture was like as powerful as like conservatives think it is. Like, I wish we could just like cancel Kyrie and we just like don't give him any coverage at all. Like, we don't talk about him when he's not playing basketball. And so like all he is just like this guy that's really good at basketball. And then when he's off the court, we just don't pay him any attention at all.
I wish, man. I wish. So that's my team. That's not gonna.
So what I'm saying is, shut up and dribble.
Jesus Christ, gone off the rails. I think that's my case or our case for why the Nets are probably not gonna win the title. And Kevin Durant's a moron too, because he sits there and he's like, doesn't bother me. And you're like, this is the strangest like ship to attach yourself to. Or I don't know what like I don't have a better analogy, but I just don't get it.
I think I figured it out. Please. So Durant joined the Warriors, and everyone gave him crap for joining the most harmonious, perfect basketball situation. And so he's like, well, fuck it. Now I have to win with, like, the worst chaos possible. But I still need talent. So, like, I can't just pick a garbage franchise and go there. I have to actually go somewhere good. But I need there to be chaos. That way people give me credit for this time, this one.
He's created the inverse Warriors, where like he joins a team and they have like really good chemistry. And so he says, okay, what if I create a team and it has terrible chemistry? Then I'll get the credit.
But I'm just going to say this here. If the Nets blow it up and Utah comes knocking with all of their picks and says, hey, we're not giving you players. Well, we'll give you a Obagi, but we want Durant. I suppose you probably have to toss in Conley to get contracts to work. But Obagi, a crap ton of picks, and Conley for Durant. Dude, I'm taking Utah. Utah's going to be in the title conversation at that point, almost instantly. And that's not even that wild to say.
Two things for you. I'd rather have Wemby than Durant at this point, especially if I'm not a team that's ready to make the immediate title jump. And secondly, Durant to Memphis is so perfect. I just want that to happen.
Can he please stay in the East?
Would you rather have a 14% chance at Wemby or an agreed upon Durant?
I feel like Durant is just he's so good, but as a fan, I kind of feel like and not that he's like blacklisted, but I'm not like thrilled about that. I'm not like, fuck yeah, Kevin Durant, the most unlikable, like socially awkward, I guess socially unaware is what I meant, player ever. Like, no, you're not super thrilled about, like, you're gonna be good, you're gonna be better than you were, but like at what cost? You have to root for Kevin Durant.
Yeah, but it's Utah.
Yeah. Before we get too far away from it, I have the odds for the first NBA head coach fired. You guys want to hear it?
Is Nash just running away with it?
It's actually Doc Rivers as of 2 days ago.
Okay.
Plus 150 for Rivers, plus 300 for Nash. Darvin Ham plus 600. I don't see that happening. I don't think there's no way they scapegoat Ham so quickly. Steven Silas for the Rockets. I don't know where their expectations are. Plus 1,000. Dwayne Casey for the Pistons plus 1,200. Tom Thibodeau plus 1,800. 1,800, I mean. Nate McMillan plus 2,000. Billy Donovan of the Bulls plus 2,800. Wes Unseld Jr. of the Wizards plus 2,800. And Chauncey Billups plus 4,000. I kind of like the Pistons one. Like, the Pistons are really bad. Like, really bad. Because it feels like they shouldn't be really bad, right? Maybe that's their plan, but I don't know. I mean, Doc and Nash, look, they're in those fall of the situations. But if I was going for the big bucks.
Yeah, and to that point, one of the ways that you can like reflect good coaching, like sometimes teams are going to have bad rosters and like you're just going to lose games. But the way that you can like always kind of see if a team's coach is good or not is whether they like their defense outperforms their talent level. And so like Mark Daigneault and OKC, the Thunder, when they are trying to be, have always been like had a defense that's a lot better than the talent level. And Detroit's defense is like the worst in the league in every measurable way.
Yeah,
like they just do everything bad. They don't get steals, but they foul a lot. They don't, you know, they give up a massive field goal percentage, and yeah, they're just bad.
You know who does look good though, at least not horrible, is Jaden Ivey. He seems fine. Like it's not a disaster, which is good. Which is good, at least for a rookie point guard, is good. And Jalen Duren he's like 18, and he looks good. He's playing. I did not think he was gonna play at all. He's playing. You want to talk about some rookies? Banchero's look good. Nate's guy. Paolo Banchero.
I like Banchero. I mean, I've seen the Banchero versus Celtics and the Pistons game. We talked about that a little bit on the last pod. But, I mean, I like the fact that they're giving reps defending the other team's good players. From what I've seen, have been pretty anti-Franz this season. Like, I remember Orlando fans, they really think they had a great shot at being good this year. And I was like, yeah, we already have Franz, and now we're adding Paolo. And I was just kind of like, cool, you guys are adding Paolo. Like, that was my whole argument of, I think, Cade's...
But you don't like Franz?
I don't like Franz.
It's a random take.
But what has he done? He's, like, kind of an average okay guy.
He, like, puts up good points and plays decent defense.
Yeah.
He's in his second year. He's averaging, like, 16, 5, and 4 on okay defense. And
on the worst team in the league.
The worst in the league.
Like, what does he do that's that different than Kyle Kuzma?
He's
a poor man's Kyle Kuzma.
I guess
Kuzma.
He is old. He's 21 years old.
Yeah. And, you know, we're seeing a team with Kuzma as their third best player, and they're going to be about 500. And, you know, it's like Orlando fans tried saying that they were going to be so much better than the Pistons. And I have very little loyalty to the Pistons. But I'm like, no, we've seen what Cade is, and we're hoping Paolo is as good as Cade. And we're hoping that Ivy is as good as Franz. And I'd much rather be in the Pistons where I know I've got the best guy as opposed to hoping that the other guy's going to be good. So,
are you guys off the Mo Bamba train yet? How's that train doing? How much coal is left in the engine right now? He's not playing. They luck.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of getting replaced by Bol Bol.
I know. They locked him down on a contract. And I was like, this is it. Mo Bamba, 8-foot wingspan, shooting threes. And it's like, no, it's actually Bol Bol, who's looked fine. Like, Bol Bol's look pretty good for Bol Bol expectations on the Magic. But I think for Banchero, when you watch young guys and the team he's on isn't very good, you can tell he's going to be really good. He just has those movements to him, the ability to score. He's going to get buckets at a high level. I wish someone loved me like Terrence Ross loves the Magic. That dude has been playing for the Magic for so fucking long. I don't know what he sees in them. He's so loyal. He's only played for two teams in his life, the Raptors and the Magic. He is both a journeyman and a loyal player, somehow.
Well, yeah.
He's been on the Magic for 7 years.
The problem is that he's, like, borderline good. Like, no one actually wants to commit and go out and get him. But, like, he's too bad to just, like, too good to just get rid of.
He'd be the Lakers' third best player.
Yeah, maybe they should get him.
They should go get... I guarantee I could find an article in the next month that's, like, Terrence Ross trade package.
Oh, I mean, they have Gary Harris.
I think he's expiring, though. Like, you can get him in a buyout.
Gary Harris. No, he's going to re-sign. There's no way he doesn't go back. He's seen too much to not win a title with his favorite team ever.
All right, so we can successfully eliminate Orlando from contention then.
All right, I was on the fence about it, but
but Bol Bol's not turning you around.
No, it's too bad.
All right, I think we can close out, but I want to start a running tally. Okay, every week I want us to say and I'm just going to run this and see how far off we are. Championship favorites every single week. We're gonna state our championship favorite and see how dumb it looks at the end of the year.
Perfect.
I love and hate this segment. Milwaukee Bucks.
Bucks for Nate.
Let me think. The Bucks seem like the obvious answer.
Bucks for Aaron.
Yeah, it's the Bucks. It's the Bucks. They don't even have Chris Middleton, and they're still good.
Yeah, like I want it to be someone else because, like, yeah, they've been good, but their offense has kind of sucked. But I still don't know who else it would be. So I'll join you and we'll three-peat as the Bucks. And then when they lose in the second round this year, it'll look really dumb.
All right. Well, we've all selected the Bucks. Aaron, where can people find you?
Hospital Chairs on TikTok.
Dylan, where can people find you?
Not making any anti-Semitic comments.
Much appreciated. And you can find all of us here at the Hoops Temple podcast. Thanks for listening.